Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
And I am coming to you live in Iowa. Bud, back in Pennsylvania after we got to see him drive through Iowa out of Nebraska after Thanksgiving weekend. Bud, have you recovered from all of the turkey you have consumed?
Yes, I haven't recovered from the Iowa Hawkeyes beating us again.
Oh, my goodness.
For the fifth time in a row.
Yeah, but hey, at least it was, you know, barely. And that's, you know, that doesn't help out anyone. It's not hand grenades. But the point being, barely, Bud. You're getting there.
Yeah, I guess at this stage in Husker history, barely is a step forward.
Well, one thing, that we're not barely what we do. I am fully the Director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Sciences, mchs.edu, and Director of the Zeta Institute for Foundation Ethics and Leadership, zetainstitute.com, here in Des Moines. We're coming to you from the Iowa Catholic Radio Mercy Live Up Studio, Des Moines side here. Bud, Pittsburgh, what are you all about and up to and whatnot?
I am at the National Institute for Newman Studies. It's an exciting morning for us this morning because news came out that the second miracle for Blessed Newman's canonization was approved. So it looks like John Henry Newman's likely to be declared a saint sometime next year.
Yeah, to clear up for folks, because I know people, he was beatified, so it's Blessed John Henry Newman. I know that you guys had made a concerted effort to pray that the second miracle would go through, that the process would happen, and, you know, not to toot your guys' horn too much, but it looks like you all are solely responsible for making it happen, Bud.
Well, the second miracle sounds like it happened in Chicago, so we can no longer say nothing good comes out of Chicago.
Good one.
But we're at newmanstudies.org if people want to read more.
So we have a special show for you today because we have listened to the voice of the people, the Vox Populi, Bud. And they said that they want to make sure that we regularly intersperse shows where it's just you and me talking. I personally don't think they fully realize what they just asked. But that's what we're going to do today. So we actually don't have a guest. We were just going to review the Husker loss quarter by quarter. No, I'm kidding. We're going to talk about an interesting time in the church's liturgical year. Of course, in secular time, we had Thanksgiving. We just finished with Christ the King. And next week, starting Sunday, we start Advent. So I like to point out, and maybe have a little bit too much fun here, that this is the end of time for the church, the last week of the liturgical season. But also, we have a strange claim in the church that we are living in the end times, the time after Christ has come. This end time has been going on for 2,000 years. And so what do we mean by that? And particularly, what does it mean to have gratitude here at the end of time, Thanksgiving, to be thankful for what we have, but when we have everything loaded so much towards the future, it seems. And so we'll be talking about that today. What makes that possible is our underwriters. So, Bud, if you need to write notes and print them out to Scott Frost about ways that Nebraska can improve in the game next year, you can go to Cartridge World, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, a way to print out, or, you know, you can, if you're Iowa State fans, please that your coach doesn't leave to Ohio State or whoever else is going to have it open.
Iowa State fans need to send a thank you note to Bill Snyder. That was an epic collapse on Saturday. Kansas State was up 17 with 9 minutes to go. But no, Cartridge World, we always try to highlight that they do environmentally friendly printing, and there's pickup and delivery for business customers. So a lot of great stuff going on.
And then also brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Bud, crazy enough, we had a former student they had on their Mercy College garb, and they went to a tire shop in Waukee. I'm not going to say it because I actually think it might be one of our sponsors, but I didn't get a chance to check first. And someone literally was like, "Hey, do you know Bo Bonner over at Mercy College?" She's like, "Yeah, I took class with him." And he's like, "Yeah, we all listen to their show, The Uncommon Good, regularly. And some of it goes over our head, but it's a really great show. And so I feel like I need to say that on air so all my bosses can hear it. And yeah, bud, so we have the tire company crowd, which actually makes me very proud. I can't wait to go brag to my parents that it's not just eggheads, but people actually do real work that listen to us.
Well, Bo, you know, you're the famous host of the show. I mean, I'm comfortable in my role as sidekick. I was curious, whenever you're at, like, have you ever been out and about in Des Moines and someone recognized your voice?
Like one or two times, and it's always sort of, I realize two things happen. They go, that voice sounds familiar. And then they're like, oh yeah, he always talks about being overweight and bearded. This must be Bo. And, they kind of triangulate like the voice and
yeah.
This description matches the way that he makes fun of himself on air. Has that happened to you yet in Pittsburgh? Like getting a pierogi or whatever?
No, I think there's too many people in Pittsburgh. We do have some listeners out here. But
your wife is more famous. They're like, you're the lady who had the great comments about Antonio Brown speeding.
Yeah, she was on TV about all that, so she's kind of like more well-known. Maybe we can swing that with promotion somehow.
Well, for wonderful banter like this and more, stick around. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after these messages. But if people want to talk about what they're thankful for, if they want to talk about their holiday shenanigans or what football team disappointed them over the weekend, they're always free to let us know on the Zip Whip Line. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. If you do hashtag UCG, we're able to see on the screen and answer your questions specifically. It's because of the Zip Whip Line. We realized that more people wanted us to sort of change things up at the show and just have Bud and I do the show. So if you have any comments, suggestions, complaints, times that you notice Bud but you were too coy to come up and talk to him, the Zip Whip Line, 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, hashtag UCG. Let us know what you want to hear about. This is The Uncommon Good, and we'll be back after these messages.
Hi, this is Marty McDonald with McDonald Imaging Solutions. It has been my joy to support Iowa Catholic Radio's new event tents and the Pope on a Stick fan used at the Iowa State Fair. McDonald Imaging Solutions is a family-owned business with thousands of promotional items to choose from. We do custom labels, printing, branded apparel, and we provide all kinds of promotional products. I personally help any business, big or small, to build their brand with corporate apparel.
Thank you, Dental Associates, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. With over 40 years' experience, Dental Associates is a group dental practice with the mission of promoting optimum health and well-being to all patients, providing preventative, restorative, and cosmetic dentistry for the entire family. Message underwritten by Dr. Kenton Gleichman, Dr. Steve Karbaka, Dr. Christine Mulcahy, and Dr. Ben Nagel. Dental Associates, addressing your smile, needs, and dreams. Online at Des Moines-Dental Associates.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400 and online.
Vitae Family Care is part of the Iowa Catholic Radio family. Pro-life physician Greg McKernan, a DO, has practiced for 27 years, seeing patients of all ages with just about every kind of need. Dr. McKernan lives his faith as a physician and is trained in NAPRO technology, allowing him to diagnose and treat many female conditions and even markedly reduce the occurrence of a miscarriage. VitaeFamilyCare.com. Remember, Vitae is Latin for life.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. Bud.
Yep.
Thanksgiving. Now, you know, we've made a secular holiday after giving gratitude. we funnily enough show this by eating as much as possible. I'm not going to fight against the logic too much because I like food and I indulge in it as well. I understand that people might think that it's a very American way to give thanks is to stuff yourself full, take a nap, watch the Dallas Cowboys lose or whatever football team that you enjoy breaking your heart. But the idea, of course, is we set aside a time really close to the Christmas break to say we need a pre-break before we have our big break. And even sort of ingrained in the secular warp and weft of the world is that you have to take time to give thanks and to say thanks. Most of this ends up being pretty sentimental. I don't want to trash this completely. I think it's nice when people take time to maybe take a few moments to think about what they're thankful for, especially in a world that has so much difficulty in it and suffering. We who live under wonderful circumstances, it's maybe the least we can do, right? But I started to think about this, that almost always Thanksgiving either falls right before or right around Christ the King Sunday, the last Sunday of the liturgical year, and that we're almost always usually stuck in the last week of November with this end of time week. And that's what we're in now, right? We're between the end of the liturgical year and starting a new one with the first Sunday of Advent. And it made me start thinking apocalyptically, bud, because that's what you do after you've eaten enough turkey. People hear the word apocalypse and they get a little frightened. When you were growing up, when you heard people talk about the apocalypse, I think this is before like robots and zombie apocalypse. You know, you and I both grew up not Catholic. We were low church places. What did you think of when you heard the word apocalypse?
Well, apocalypse figured actually pretty largely in the Christian context that I grew up in. So we were a community that talked a lot about the rapture. I don't know if folks have seen like the Left Behind books, and that was sort of like our actual theology. So there was this idea that the return of Christ was imminent. But for us, it kind of meant like Christians being whisked away from sort of like the problems in the world. Now, that didn't exactly absolve, like, it didn't take away all my anxieties, because for me, like, a big fixation was, like, would I be a part of those who were raptured? And I know, like, for low church Protestants, you're supposed to know that with certainty, but I was a little concerned that I had, you know, said the formula with true authenticity.
Oh, right, yeah, no, When it came to us, we had ideas of the sinner's prayer, and if you had Jesus in your heart, ask Jesus in your heart, you're good to go. And I asked him twice, I guess, just to make sure. But not trying to make too light of, you know, that sort of situation. I bring it up to say when Christians start throwing around the idea of the end of the times or end of world or apocalypse, what starts to happen maybe is we're in this time of the season where people are thinking Thanksgiving and gratitude. And it sure as heck starts to sound like maybe we don't think that the world is, you know, long for the world. That's a really bad pun. And maybe that Thanksgiving is, we use either the world sort of like someone who knows it doesn't have inherent value, or we hate the world, or we detest the world. And, you know, you read the book of Revelation, and there's some pretty hardcore things going on. A lot of fire, a lot of things being destroyed, birds eating so much flesh that they can't fly. Some crazy stuff, bud. I wonder if you've ever encountered this. I mean, I know that right now you're teaching an intro class about theology. Do you get the impression that sometimes people think Christianity is world-hating, and that really affects why we do the politics, back the political positions that we do?
Yeah, I've kind of puzzled over this one, Bo, because I've heard that line of argument, but I don't know for myself. I don't want to flip the tables and kind of scapegoat the other direction, but when we begin to look at some of the serious kind of problems that have affected the natural world, like the use of our land, the fires that we've seen in California and things like that, to me it really feels sort of like post-Christian society, like when you had sort of like industrialization and then that combined with secular ideas about the economy and things like that is really when you started to see environmental problems accelerate. Whereas if you look at the medieval order, it seems to me from the evidence that I've looked at that people had like a more harmonious relationship with the land. Not that it was perfect, but certainly, I guess like this is a stereotypical idea that can come up with some undergrads, that Christianity, because it focuses on an other world or like life beyond this world, that we don't somehow properly value the gifts that are in front of us.
And it gets to be interesting, right? Because, of course, anything that tries to attain to the truth, to be faithful to the truth, is going to be attacked by both sides. I always throw out to people who ask that one good indication, not a perfect one, that maybe you're starting to do something right is if you get attacked by both sides. And the church will sometimes undergo scrutiny like this. On one hand, people will go, well, you guys are these apocalyptic weirdos. You think the world and even heaven itself is going to be consumed by fire and there will be a new heaven and new earth, and so you guys don't ultimately care. That leads you either to abuse the world or ignore it. So we get all that on one hand. But then, like, you look at, I don't know, the medieval church, their understandings of, like, sort of, you know, agriculture and that we're stewards, right? And dominion is not ruling over the earth, but it's like husbandry, tending a garden. And then people will go like, oh, well, that's because they all loved the empire and they backed the status quo, right? So you get this like tension, right? Like if you care about the world too much, it's like, oh, well, this is giving up the radical nature of Christ and you guys just want to baptize the standing order. But on the other hand, right, if you press like, okay, the sort of apocalyptic ingathering of God's grace in the world, you go, well, you hate us and you ignore the world. And I think it's a good indication, Bud, that we catch that from both sides. But if we're catching it from both sides, so then what starts to be the mean? How is it in this last week of the liturgical year, at the end of time, so said by our Lord, that we live in the world but not of the world? And what does that look like, or how does that make it different than other people understanding their time on the terrestrial journey?
Well, for me, like, one thing that comes up real quickly is it really does, to me, it gives me sort of like a proper orientation to the gifts that God has given me. And what I mean by that is there's a way where we could hold things too loosely and not really care about stewardship, or I think like you see this even in the New Testament where Paul tells people like they've stopped working,
right,
because they're expecting the return of Christ. And that's not like the constructive answer. He says like, no, if you don't work, you shouldn't eat.
By the way, that's like, totally a move that I think that I would have automatically jumped to. As I would have heard Paul and I'm like, so we don't have to work anymore, right? Just naps. Paul's like, no, that's not actually what I said, Bo. I'm like, are you sure that's not what you said, Paul? Because I really thought what I heard you say is that, okay, yeah, so near. Okay, yeah. Keep going.
But St. Paul has some really interesting thoughts on this. So he does say at one point, you know, like, those who are married should live as if they're not, which is, to our ears, that's kind of a paradoxical statement. And I don't think many Christians have fully cultivated, like, the kind of sense that Paul's, like, admonishing us to have there. But what comes to mind for me is, like, so, Bo, getting back to Thanksgiving, like, there's a moment where I was at Rachel's grandparents' house, and, you know, like, it was just one of those sort of, like, pre-sentiments of the kingdom, like a foretaste of the kind of communion that you'll have in heaven, you know. It's like a very beautiful moment. And there's a part of you as a person that wants to kind of cling to that, you know what I'm saying? You want to, like, how can I preserve this at all costs?
Right.
And I think that would be the flip side, like an error in the other direction. And that to put like some flesh on that, on those bones, like, I think as Catholics, we have to be excited about the idea of our children having a religious or priestly vocation, and to kind of like resist that because of like desire for grandchildren or some sort of like temporal arrangement would be to resist the kind of eschatological, like, inbreaking of the kingdom sensibility that we need to have.
Yeah, you know, that ends up being a really interesting reality as a convert that I really wasn't ready for. I think in my mind, everybody kind of was like, yeah, I'll have a kid or two that will be, you know, a priest or a sister or a nun or whatnot. And to become Catholic and then realize that there's sort of an ongoing conversation of the real resistance against that really surprised me, I suppose. And part of this might have just been growing up low church where it wouldn't be really all that weird to have a family member be like bivocational, right? So they work, but then they preach on the side, or maybe go do missions for a year, you know, or you know what I'm saying, right? I think maybe you had the same ideas that because being part of a ministry in a low church Protestant sitting is nebulous, and the gates are sort of low, right? Like it's not too hard to do. Then when you go in and realize, oh, right, for Catholics, in all sorts of different ways, to become a priest or to become religious is to really say, I'm making a radical break from the status quo of my family, and that there are people that, like you said, even I think we consider pretty much good Catholics resistant to that. And it really made me start to go like, oh, there's something very much different going on here. And I think that is exactly a great point to make, Bud, is that when we look at what we think, what we owe God in terms of our children, that starts to be a radical way to think about that is, would you give one of your children to the service of God knowing that they might not make too many Thanksgivings afterwards? You know, that starts to really, like you said, put it in radical relief.
Yeah, and I think it cashes out in other ways. So we've already pointed out or pointed back to previous eras of Christian history. And you think about some of the art that the church produced, the great cathedrals or even beautiful churches like St. Anthony's in Des Moines or the Basilica there.
There you go, Monsignor. Good job, bud. Way to make a name drop.
Shout out to Monsignor Chido. Yeah. You think about buildings like that, and on the one hand, I think people could look at something like that and say, like, well, that's a waste of resources because couldn't these funds been used to feed the poor or, you know, something along those lines. And you see the communities that built some of those buildings, they weren't terribly well off, but they had this kind of proper tension where they said, this is a good use of the gifts that God has given us, and there's nothing that's more worthy of us doing than to build a beautiful place of worship in which, like, future generations can adore God. And yet, and on the one hand, that was the use of earthly resources, but it also pointed to transcendence, you know, like that we have something, a greater reality that we're moving towards, whereas, like, so many buildings that were built, like, in a modernist style are just, in my mind, sort of brutal architecture.
Placeholders, right?
Like, yeah, there's no reason to make them beautiful buildings in the minds of those who crafted them because they're just meant to serve like a functional purpose. And like, it was a community fixated on this world. And so you lost that kind of like, homage to transcendence.
You know, I weirdly think about this in terms of our, mutual buddy, Brian Gonzalez, who is, a guy who, you know, raises money, for InterVisions, for instance. He's done other charities as well. And I think about the fact that, like, you know, we need those now because otherwise people probably wouldn't give, right? Giving Tuesday was yesterday. The reason this comes to mind is Brian thanked me for a donation I gave, and I told him that I texted him. I was like, oh, I actually meant to just – I was trying to buy a Night Court DVD. I didn't mean to give that to you just to mess with him. And then I was all like really proud of like recalling Night Court. And anybody under like 35 listening has no clue what I'm talking about. Anyway, point being is, Brian made me think about, right, we have to have things like Giving Tuesday. We have to have, you know, directors of fundraising. We have to sort of like marshal people's spirits around to give money. But you're right, like these poor communities, just look at Des Moines, didn't have any of that. They just gave, and they gave half the time people would give their resources to projects they wouldn't live to see completed. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're exactly right to see how money and the ability to enjoy something, you know, it takes a different sort of method to get modern man to give to something. And by modern, I literally mean just two or three generations back. Whereas people used to think that maybe that was their crowning achievement, was not even the work that they did or anything they personally did, but that they were a part of giving a community like Des Moines, someplace like the Basilica, etc.
Well, I mean, and another issue that's come up a lot on the show is like how Catholics relate to what we consider like mainstream politics. When people use the word political today, what they mean by that, you know, And I think this idea of having an eschatological perspective helps us in this area as well. Because on the one hand, you know, we have the parables from Christ that, like, there are talents given to us, and just to, like, bury them in the ground would be a mistake. And so I don't think, like, the idea can be that because we're bound for the heavenly kingdom that we're just removed from that. On the other hand, we do recognize that, like, our ultimate stock, our hope is not in any one, like, specific political outcome. And so we can, again, hold things properly, loosely. That's really bad syntax. But also, like, we're not clinging to, like, a certain outcome, and we never have to, like, sell our soul, so to speak, to any sort of, like, specific political movement. And yet, on the other hand, like, we can say, like, I mean, in some ways it gives us, I feel like, this St. Philip Neri type playfulness, you know, where,
right,
like, we know where our hope lies, and we know, like, first principles, like, the things that are truly important. And then so we can sort of speak prophetically, or even sometimes in jest, to those who think, like, their hope is in princes or in specific sort of, like, election results, I guess.
Yeah, no, we're not to white-knuckle anything, right? The idea, yeah, that you hold something so tight that your knuckles change colors, and that there's many ways that we don't disdain the world. We hold the things of the world in our hand, but we don't grasp them. I mean, that sounds maybe too poetic for what we're getting at. Getting close to the break, I want to make one correction, of course. Brian mm-hmm. Gonzalez is the director of development, not of fundraising. And I start to think that is an interesting thing, too, is, again, I'm not, like, bashing that the people do the position. People like Brian do miraculous work. I think it says something to us, though, that we need to be developed, right? Like, we're a group that we don't even hoard money, right? Like, it's not like if I didn't give money to, you know, a charity, that I would be, like, in the bank, you know, gaining money for me. It just would have been, like, 4 or 5 or 20 burritos, whatever that works out to. For other people, that's like a third jet ski. Half the time, I think it's not that people are ever malicious and not spreading what they have to those who don't. It's that we're so not mindless. What's the right word? We've lost the ability to pay attention to how people need these things. It's like our eyes are fixed in the wrong spots, and we have blind spots. We have on blinders. I mean, you start thinking about the metaphors that we use. But we literally have to employ people to say, you know, if you don't do blank, this person, these groups of people, this feature of our society will go by the wayside. It won't be met. People will have problems, and you have the ability to help, but you bought another burrito or jet ski or house. And, you know, sometimes it's not, it would almost be better, like, if there were just malicious villains running around, Bud, that we could just go, like, no, they're just bad and they're just trying to deprive it. But we look at our own lives here in the last week of the liturgical year and start to go, our gaze has drifted away. We've lost sight of the things that we need to see. And so in the secular world, or, you know, in the charitable world, we have directors of development. Hopefully our priests give homilies that do this, or that friend to friend we're able to say, we need to turn back, right? Metanoia means to turn back and fix our eyes on the Lord and the places that he shows up. And here at the end of the liturgical year, I think that's something important for us to be honest about so that we can begin to prepare in Advent. We're up to the break, Bud. When we get back, we can maybe talk about more of the ramifications, like you said, with political and civic life in general. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr. Stick around. We'll be back after these messages. And again, if you have anything you want us to bring up, just remember 515-223-1150, the zip whip line you can text. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after these messages. Speaking of here at the end of time, not the end of the world, but you're running out of time to sign up to go to our dinner in December. If you join us for our annual dinner in December, it will be Friday, December 7th, mere weeks away at Embassy Suites, downtown Des Moines. 6:30 p.m. cocktail hour, 7:15 p.m. dinner, And then 8 p.m., our keynote speaker, Dr. Ray Guarindi, of EWTN's The Doctor's Inn, Catholic father of 10, clinical psychologist, author, professional speaker, national and radio TV host. He's given over 3,000 talks on various topics, including parenting, marriage, family, and the Catholic faith. Captivates audiences with his compelling humor-laced presentations and providing practical advice and proven techniques. If you want to RSVP, you can go to iowacatholicradio.com/events, call 515-223-1150, or check out more about it on our social media, at IA Catholic Radio for Twitter, and Iowa Catholic Radio on Facebook. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after this.
Thank you, Farm Bureau agent Cindy Schulte, for underwriting Catholic Women Now. As an authorized independent agent, Cindy's team can provide health insurance options from Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa. Cindy Schulte at 1315 50th Street in West Des Moines, or on the web at cindyschulte.com. 515-226-2111. Cindy and her team know health insurance.
Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. Products available at Farm Bureau Financial Services.
Thank you, R&R Realty Group, for supporting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. R&R Realty Group is an Iowa commercial real estate owner and developer that provides services for all commercial real estate needs, including brokerage, interior space planning, real estate management, construction, and more. R&R Realty Group has been accommodating business expansions and real estate solutions since 1985, solving commercial real estate needs. R&R Realty Group, establishing long-term relationships built on trust.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarindi here from EWTN's The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permitting, I will be joining Iowa Catholic Radio for their dinner in December, Friday, December 7th, at the Embassy Suites downtown. And if you pay a little extra, I might even share a parenting tip or two. They won't be very good. I have to see how much you paid. Iowa Catholic Radio's dinner in December is Friday, December 7th, at the Embassy Suites downtown. Find more information about tickets at iowacatholicradio.com or 515-223-1150. Hope to see you.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher talking to you about the end of time. More specifically, the end of liturgical time, this week between Christ the King Sunday, after we've celebrated Thanksgiving, and the start of Advent next week. But also the fact that we live in the world, but not of it. We live here in the end times, but not the end times like I think some people think with zombie apocalypses and whatnot. But this time after Christ has revealed the will of God in the earth through his church, and spreading that kingdom. But when we left off, I think we've really kind of hit this idea about the tension of the already and not yet. But maybe we start to talk about the practicality of what that looks like. So, you know, we said Thanksgiving, and we kind of joked around that one of the ways we show thanks is by eating even more turkey than we would regularly. There is, however, I think you start to see with Jesus's parables, how, you know, in thanksgiving for what God has done for us, how we're to be, you know, foolish in how we deal with other people. You think of the parable of the servant that was forgiven of his debt, but then when he meets one of his fellow servants who owes him money, he has that servant thrown in jail. And so then the master in this parable goes, you know, if you're not even going to forgive someone who owes so little, and you who owed so much had it forgiven of you, now I will require every penny be paid. There's an idea that when we think about the real world, the practical world, and maybe sometimes what happens with religion is people go, okay, fine, so you guys don't hate the world, and maybe you're not like just lackeys for the status quo. But what you are is unrealistic, they'll say. You guys want everybody to share. You want us to care about people. You want us to be nice. But someone has to be the adult in the room and have the calculator and, you know, they get onto this. And frankly, I fall easily to this because I barely know how math works and clearly not really well with money. You know, that's John Leonetti. That's the guy you need to go to if you need economic advice. But I think that there's something to of truth of what they're saying, but that only sort of heightens what we've been told. It might be true that by the world standards, the egregious liberality at which God wants us to share our gifts, if the pagans were right, would be a ridiculous way to understand how we're supposed to live the world. But here at the end of time, end of liturgical time, but also the end of times with Jesus Christ, I think sometimes we're compelled to live foolishly in sharing our blessings, and in so doing, showing that we actually believe that God is who he says he is, and that he can actually back up the gratitude and the generosity he expects of us.
Yeah, you know, Bo, I think that idea of realism has led many astray. And you're calling to mind for me a lot of the portions of the gospel. So I think about something like when the religious leaders try to trap our Lord and say, like, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? And Christ takes the coin and says, like, you know, whose face is on this? And, of course, it's the ruler's. And he says, well, give to Caesar what's due to Caesar, and what's God's due to God. And we hear that passage, and there's a certain way where you can interpret that and say, well, that's pretty easy. Like, I just pay my taxes, and then I do my Christianity, and there's, like, this simple bifurcation, you know?
Right.
But I think Christ was actually challenging his listeners, like, if we ask ourselves what belongs to God, you know, that really starts to expand outward. And so when you're talking this morning about this eschatological perspective and keeping in mind the imminent return of Christ and our ultimate destiny, you know, that means that any decision we make, this is kind of, the phrase is probably not fully appropriate, but like kingdom values, you know, like this idea that our commitment to the kingdom of God takes priority above all else, that has to guide our lives. And so you see someone like Pontius Pilate, who didn't really have like terrible intentions, or like, I don't think he was out to like take care of Christ, like to, you know, kill him from the beginning. But he thought, like, practically, if I don't do this, there's going to be a revolt, right?
Right.
And so this kind of like realism actually compromised his moral sense.
Well, and I think that, you know, I want to be clear that there's a way in which if we do everything Christ asks us, it is ridiculous. One thing that I like doing with undergrads is reading, you know, the Beatitudes, but specifically afterwards where we get the heavy hitting, you know, turn the other cheek. If someone asks for your coat, give them their shirt, you know, like walk the extra mile, all these things like this. And what I'm always hoping eventually, because a lot of people think like, oh, well, I need to, you know, give the pious answer and always make it sound good. But finally you get a kid who's like, well, this will never work. And you're like, thank you. Because if we ignore the force of what Jesus is saying, I don't think we can get to the next point, which is to say, of course, all of this is impossible without Christ. And that's not to say that like some of the standard understandings of how this all works. I'm very well aware, of course, right, that Catholic social teaching has talked about the difference between self-defense and aggression and all these things like this, right? And there's even things like, you know, turn the other cheek, making someone, you know, slap with the inside of their cheek, is actually being very forthright and making them, you know, intimately do so, all these things like this. What the point I'm trying to make is there's people who act like we abuse the earth because we believe it's going up in flames, but actually, or there's people who act like we just maintain the status quo. But what Christians are called to do is to be ridiculous with themselves, not the earth. Don't use the earth ridiculously. Sure, you've been called to be a gardener in God's paradise. But with you and your stuff, your essence, yeah, God calls you to this idea to say, do you believe that I can be the true source of your happiness, of your ability to go forward and live, your livelihood? It's frankly scary because it's more personalized. It'd be one thing if God was saying like, oh, well, don't worry about the world. It's going away. But instead he's saying like, do you believe that you could exist resting in my hands. And I mean, that's something I know I struggle with every day, and I think we all do. But that's what it means to live at the end of time, at the end of liturgical time, at the end of days, etc.
Well, we've kind of been batting around this idea of like holding things too lightly or too loosely. And one thing that strikes me when I walk through the Gospels is that it's crazy. Like, a lot of times what keeps people back from knowing Jesus are not, like, again, you've always joked about, like, there, usually when sin or confronts us or, like, turning away from God's will, it's not like Skeletor or some sort of, like, clearly evil villain, not even the little demon on our shoulder. It's very often a good thing.
Right.
You know, like the guy who wants to go bury his father, or the young man who's fulfilled all the precepts of the law, which is further along than I've been able to get to at this point, you know?
Right.
But then Christ asks him this radical thing, like, give all that you, like, take all that you have and give it to the poor. Because I think he recognizes that those good things, you know, his nice house or whatever, his 401k, that's precisely what's holding him back. Like, C.S. Lewis, not a Catholic author, but I think someone with a very Catholic-esque mindset, in The Great Divorce, like, he shows, like, in our culture, sometimes we'll fixate on, like, sexual sins, and it's not to downplay the seriousness that those kinds of things can have, but he depicts this people journeying towards God, and God has a way sometimes of snuffing those out very quickly or excising that kind of attachment.
Right.
But, like, the mom who clings to her son because, like, that's her greatest love in the world, and she can't imagine in heaven that her son will love God more than he loves her. That can actually, that good thing can be the thing, like the final obstacle that can't be overcome.
No, I think that's a great way to put what we're, like, what we're driving at here is what kingdom values or the eschatological ethics or, like, all these really big, fun ways we can put it. What it comes down to is, I think Christ usually asks what seems ridiculous for each person. So that person that he goes, let me bury my dad, you know, Christ is saying to him, not everyone, like, so the idea is not like this, like, huge Christian thing, like, no more burial if you're a Christian. Same thing with, like, wealth, right? He obviously didn't ask it of someone like Nicodemus to give away what he had. Christ saw into the heart and asked, what does that person need to do in order to become, you know, ridiculous, a fool for Christ? And I think the sort of person that I hold out, and maybe this is just because I sang the song when I was a little kid, is Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus willingly, I mean, you know, and you think about one, someone who was willing to turn his back on his community to be a tax collector, right? A lot of that has to do with prestige, right? I mean, social position, you know, all these other things. They were looked down upon, not like in general, they were looked down upon by the Pharisees, right? Because they were seen as traitors, people who were social climbers. And so Zacchaeus, who, the you know, we're told is short of stature, and maybe I'm reading more into it, right, but it's like, seems to me this guy has a chip on his shoulder. I'm going to become a tax collector. I'm going to run around. I'm going to, like, grab your tax from you. He has so much invested in that life that he was leading. But with Jesus, he was willing to ridiculously, as a grown man, crawl up a tree just to see what was going on. And then, you know, the scripture reports that literally Jesus has a conversation with a grown dude in a tree, bud. I don't think sometimes we grasp that, right? He's talking to a grown man in a tree, and it's like, well, I'm going to go over to your house. And then after that, Zacchaeus goes crazy. He's just literally throwing out stuff. He's like, I'll give away half my wealth, and people that I've messed over, I'll pay them back. The fourfold, tenfold, whatever he says. It's actually, the thing with Zacchaeus, right, is it's less that any of it's sensical or programmatic. It's that Zacchaeus was willing to be a fool and ridiculous because of what was before him. And I think that's the lesson here the last week of the liturgical year is Christ is calling all of us to be ridiculous by the world standards for him. And this goes back to the pearl of great price and everything like this. That's what this last week in the liturgical season maybe is calling us to do.
When you were growing up, did you learn Zacchaeus was a wee little man in the song?
And a wee little man was he. Yes.
It's pretty catchy.
Sycamore tree. I don't think that's... Was that in the Bible?
I think that's the King James translation. And I, you know, I love the King James, but sometimes, like, I think they get their fruits and veggies wrong.
He climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. Yeah. Zacchaeus. You come down. Yep.
It's really great.
Yeah.
I think
that we have our next big hit, bud, to record for the Uncommon Good Sings the Hits.
We're going to need a remix edition. No, I think you're right. I think there is a sort of like, you're talking about this kind of like craziness or like foolishness when it comes to a certain gratuity in embracing the pearl of great price. And for me, like, you remember growing up with those kaleidoscopes? And it would refract the light like in hundreds, thousands of different.
Yes, and by the way, like, I'm thinking about if I would try to convince my kids that kaleidoscopes were cool, they'd be like, "This phone doesn't work." But yes, I remember very much thinking kaleidoscopes were awesome.
This is mainly an exercise of nostalgia, like VBS songs that I learned in kaleidoscopes. No, I think the saints are sort of like a kaleidoscope of holiness, and what I mean by that is you see like continuities or similarities, but it gets refracted depending on the time period. So you mentioned Zacchaeus. I think of St. Paul, like he gets, beat several times and he keeps like coming back for more.
Right.
Because he knows like this is what God has called him to. John Henry Newman, we were talking about his canonization this morning, like in his own time, for an Anglican cleric to leave the Church of England and to embrace Roman Catholicism, like it was a great sacrifice for him, not only career-wise, but just in terms of reputation. Each Guy Fawkes Day, Englishmen would burn effigies of the Pope. And so we can't say, you get sainthood wrong, I think, if you're like, "I'm going to go climb a sycamore tree."
Right, yeah. Like,
or I'm going to, leave the Church of England. But, there is that, what is God calling to us in this moment where we have the same kind of gratuity that we saw in the life of John Henry Newman, Zacchaeus, St. Paul, etc.
Yeah, I think with Mercy College, I think of Sister Catherine McCauley, who, when she earns this big, I won't go into all of it, but if you know the story, she gets a big windfall. She has a house. She's a made woman and decides to found a house of mercy instead. And, it's not just that people were like, "Wow, that's a bold move." People were like, "You are insane." Like, I mean, people were angry with her that she would do something that defied imagination so much. And so I think sometimes you have to really throw a curveball for Jesus. And I think Deacon Tony has a curveball for us. I think he's going to... Yeah, here you go. This is the longest intro of a song ever, Deacon Tony. This is the album version. There you go, bud. Get out your kaleidoscope and rock out to...
Climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see.
All right, we don't want to ruin Bud's voice. We better,
I guess Deacon Tony was, he was firing that up when I was making that last comment, and I just thought it was a glitch in the radio station.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard the intro before, but that's pretty fresh.
Or maybe you were... Did you think you were hallucinating, like you had a flashback at some place, like with Omaha, Nebraska, circa 1986?
Well, right when that music started playing, I could taste like graham crackers and Kool-Aid.
What's funny is how those things sit with you. Yeah. The teacher that we had in Vacation Bible School, his name was Virginia, because we lived in Oklahoma and people had states' names as first names. And she sang that song, but she sang it on an auto harp. And all these years later, I've been no good at guitar or anything that needs fretted music. My hands are too small. I already have arthritis. But I bought an auto harp, so every time I play it, that brings me back to the 80s in Waukeeta, Oklahoma, First Baptist Church. So I think I'm going to have to go learn how to play Zacchaeus Was a Wee Little Man on the auto harp, bud. I did not realize when we started this conversation that this is where the talk was going to go. But when you listen to the people and they ask you to have interspersed times when it's just Bo and Bud time, this is where our show goes, is singing Zacchaeus Was a Wee Little Man on air.
Well, I have one kind of silly comment and then a serious one based on what you were just saying. First off, I'm no fan of the state of Texas, but there was a family that we grew up with.
Yeah.
That they had like four boys and they named them all after cities in Texas. So it was like Dallas, Houston, Austin, and something.
Yeah.
I was like, that's bold, and I admired that. I didn't realize Okies, they chose states for names. That's cool.
Yeah, that's right. I had a great-grandma named Bama, but at any rate, go ahead.
The serious comment is, you mentioned the Sisters of Mercy, And a friend recently handed me a prayer card of St. Francis Cabrini.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when you're saying that, it struck me. So this goes beyond Catherine McCauley to the sisters that followed her in the successive generations. But again, you think about the sacrifices that they underwent, because in our minds, I think when we say, like, we hear these folks came from Italy or Ireland, we think, oh, like, that's not too terrible of a flight.
Right.
Right. But, like, when Frances Cabrini said bye to her family, that was, like, goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But she felt compelled by the voice of God to go help poor Italian immigrants here in the United States. And, again, I guess what we're getting at and what we're driving at is just developing the sense that God has called us to something great, and there's really no sacrifice that we could make for that calling that's going to return. Like, it's going to return hundredfold. It's going to return greater than any investment that we make, like, in this world or in financial areas.
Well, I even think about, like, so Sister Zita, right, who the institute's yeah. named after, Sister Zita Brennan here in Des Moines. She did the same thing. She was in Ireland, and then in her teenage years left for Iowa. And, you know, I honestly don't know if, like, she ever had the opportunity to fly back or anything like this. But my point being is it's the 20th century, and she was saying bye, like, thinking that she would never see anyone again. And that is, apocalyptic, right, to just be able yeah. to, like, hold the world so loosely that everything you've known, you said goodbye and you leave. Now, on the other hand, though, she got here and cared about a place so much that her presence is interstitched in the Des Moines Catholic and the Mercy Hospital community, right? Like, many people listening to this show either themselves or have family members that have birth certificates hand calligraphied by Sister Zita. Mm. And so that, to me, starts to be this already not yet, this mean between the two extremes. She held the world lightly enough to leave Ireland as a teenage girl, but loved the world enough to stamp a place forever with her presence, right? And she loved yeah. Des Moines, right? And so that, to me, is the sort of mystery. I don't know if it's quite a paradox, but it's certainly something for all of us to dwell on. Like you said, these powerful, miraculous women who made such sacrifices, but for a place, right? They were willing to give up so much in order, like you said, to buy so much in return. And here at the end of the liturgical time, at the end of time, the last days, the days of our Lord, that's what we got to do, bud. That's the marching orders as we prepare for Advent this coming Sunday.
Well, real quickly, I know we're up against the clock, but we say this, I feel like you and I say this each year that this time of year rolls around. But so I hope it doesn't sound trite, but it really, I think, is significant. So you were mentioning Thanksgiving and kind of like the festive nature of everything. And in the world at large, like, we transition into sort of a frenetic period, right?
Right.
When the church in its wisdom intends this as a time, I think penitentially, but also as a time of reflective sort of meditation and expectation for the coming of Christ. And so I think for us as Catholics in 2018, it requires a little more intentionality to say, I'm not going to go straight from feasting to frenetic shopping and busyness, but I need to, I'm going to carve out space to listen to the voice of God.
Yeah, and I think that I was talking about this morning with John Leonetti, is I think Lent truly is kinetic. We go to the desert. We try to let things go and rid ourselves of things. Advent is penitential, but more like, you know, Mary as a pregnant mother. It's about preparing and nesting, right? Penitential in their own ways, both, but, you know, one is more the idea of emptying ourselves, but this one coming up with Advent is preparing. We're preparing for the big event. We're pregnant with the Lord's presence, and we're looking towards the birth of His presence in our life. And I think that's a perfect way to wrap it up, bud. This is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our family, our city, our state, our nation, the world, solar system, galaxies, the whole kit and caboodle. This is the Uncommon Good. We'll be back next week. Just real quick, we want to let people know a few things. Again, the dinner in December, December 7th on Friday, Embassy Suites, 6:30 cocktail hour, 7:15 dinner, 8 p.m. keynote speaker, Dr. Ray Guarindi. So go to iowacatholicradio.com/events to go see that. Call 515-223-1150. Visit all of our social media pages. And then remember that this is a ministry. It involves more than just the people on the air. It very much involves you. Your prayers sustain us, but also your donation. So please consider donating us if you are able. But if people want to enjoy the rest of program that we have here on Iowa Catholic Radio, what are a few highlights that they can participate in?
This Advent season, grow deeper in your faith with Bible in a Year at 5 a.m., Rosary at 5:30. Then at night, there's a Rosary again at 9:30, followed by a reflection on the Gospel by Father Andrew Winchittle.
And finally, I want to make sure to invite everybody next week, December 1st. We have our Catholic Culture Conference. So December 1st, Saturday at St. Augustine's, I believe that's 6 or 7, but you can look on iowacatholicradio.com. I'll be giving a talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe, so it should be a lot of fun. All right, bud, take care. Happy Thanksgiving, man. Have a good Advent. And again, pumped to hear that Newman's going to be made a saint and that you get to be right at the epicenter of a place that really gets to celebrate that.
All right, blessings. Happy Advent.
All right, see you all next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.